So this is a talk on CLIC, and it's joint work with Jinlu and Juhui Li, who are both graduate students at Waterloo, and Ashraf Abulnaga, who's a colleague of mine. Most of the work that I'm talking about was done by Jin, and unfortunately she couldn't come here today for the conference, so you get me instead for the presentation. So the problem that we're looking at with CLIC is the problem of multi-tier caching, two-tier caching specifically. This is a problem that arises in a lot of scenarios. So you get stacks of cache like this when you have a distributed file system client with a cache in it and a server with a cache in it, or an application like a database system with a cache sitting in front of a file system or a storage server. There's nothing that's particularly specific in CLIC to database systems, but this was the scenario that I'm showing up here was the one that we were, that kind of motivated us to look at this problem. So that's what I'm going to be focusing on during the talk, and our evaluation of CLIC looks at this particular scenario. So this is fast, so I'm guessing many of you have seen this two-tier caching problem before, and you know what the issues are. We're worried about how to manage the cache on the bottom here. But for the benefit of those of you who haven't seen this problem before, I have a quick little cartoon to show you what the problem is. So imagine that this database system needs the page P that's down on the storage server below. It doesn't have P in the cache, in its cache, and so it's going to issue a read request to the storage server. Storage server doesn't have the page in its cache, so it's going to go and read the page off the device. Assuming it's using some sort of locality-based replacement policy, it'll save a copy of P in its cache and then pass the page back up to the database system, which will store P in its cache as well. Okay, so if you're worried about how to manage the second-tier cache, there are some issues that arise. So one of the problems that you can see here is that there's copies of P in both caches. This is the cache. This is called the cache inclusion problem, and it means that you're wasting space. In general, you can waste the smaller of the two caches completely because of multiple copies of P like this. And a related problem is very poor temporal locality at the second tier cache. So the idea is that you put a page like P up in the database system, and if the database system is managing based on temporal locality, the storage server is not going to see a request for P anytime soon. So keeping sort of the least recently used pages in here is not a great idea. So this problem has been observed in a lot of studies of these kinds of scenarios. And the problem's been around for a while, and there have been sort of quite a few approaches proposed for solving these kind of problems. And I'm not going to take time to go through all of those. There is a related work discussion in the paper. CLIC, one of these types of solutions that's out there is this idea of hinting, and this is the category of solution that CLIC falls into. So the idea of hinting is that since I can't really rely on temporal locality down here to make replacement decisions, I'm going to get the top tier to attach hints, some extra information, to the requests that it sends down, and we're going to hope that those hints carry some useful information that can be used down here to make replacement decisions. So since I don't have locality, I'll rely on the hints instead. Okay, and as an example of a hinting technique, so this is not CLIC, I want to talk about write hints as an example. So this is some work that we did that appeared a couple of years ago in FAST. And the idea of write hints is that the database system or whatever's up here in the first tier is going to attach a hint to requests that it sends down, write requests in particular. And what that hint is going to do is it's going to essentially describe why the first tier is writing the page. Okay, so it's going to distinguish between what we called recoverability writes and replacement writes. And the idea is for a recoverability write, the top tier is writing the page because it's worried about recoverability and losing the page in case of a failure. Okay, so it's trying to limit the amount of stuff that it's going to lose in case of a failure. And a replacement write is a write that's done by the buffer manager up here just because it wants to make the page cheaper to evict, okay, should it decide to replace the page later. Okay, so the idea is we'll indicate which of those two types of writes is happening by attaching a hint to this page that comes down here. And then at the storage server, I can use that hint to decide whether to cache the page or not. In particular, the storage server might say, well, replacement rights indicate that an eviction of that page is likely at the tier above, so I'll keep a copy of it down here. And a recovery right probably doesn't indicate an eviction, and so I'll ignore those pages and I won't put them in my cache. Okay? So that's an idea, that's an example of a hint-based strategy, and there have been a bunch of these that have been proposed. So there are importance hints, for example, where you can say, if I'm got a cache manager up here that's prioritizing pages, when it sends requests down below, it can tag the requests with some indication of how important they are to the first tier. And then things that are important in the first tier are going to tend to stay up there, and the second tier can use that hint to decide not to cache important things. Okay? So that's the way these hints work. And the thing that I want you to note from this is that at the storage server, in this case, I could use a policy that we developed called TQ, which is a hint-aware replacement policy. It understands write hints. It understands the difference between a replacement write and a recovery write. And this is what we would call an ad hoc hint replacement policy, because it understands one particular kind of hint and knows how to deal with those. Okay? And the existing hint-based techniques are these kind of ad hoc techniques. You build a policy into the storage server here that understands particular kinds of hints. So the problems with these ad hoc policies are, I guess I would classify them in several types of problems. So one problem is this kind of obvious problem of narrowness. So each of these policies knows how to understand one type of hint. And if you want to generate a new type of hint from the first tier, you need a new policy, or you need to modify the existing policy to handle that. And if you want to, one of the first things we wanted to do is, what if I can generate multiple hints from the first tier, right? How do I sort of extend my policies to deal with these multiple hints, especially if they give me conflicting advice, right? What happens if I have an important thing that's being written which suggests that I shouldn't keep it, but it's a replacement right which suggests that I should keep it? How do I know how to build a policy to do that? Another problem that we encountered when we were looking at write hints is brittleness, okay, and that sometimes it's not obvious how you should respond to a particular type of hint at the second tier. And this is something you have to decide when you're designing the policy. And again, this problem becomes worse if you try to use more than one type of hint at once. And the third type of problem occurs when you try to generalize this to a situation where you've got more than one thing at the top tier. Because these hints are helping the storage server decide sort of how to make caching decisions, how to distinguish among requests that are coming from a single client. If I've got multiple clients, then I don't know how to sort of compare hints between those things. If I get replacement rights from both of these systems, how do I decide which of those two pages I should keep? Okay? So CLIC is a hint-based policy, but we're trying to do something a little different here. So it's a hint-aware caching policy for second-tier caches, but with CLIC, we're not going to hard code in the second tier a response to any particular hint type. So this is supposed to be a generic policy for dealing with hints at the second tier, not a response to a particular type of hint. And so instead of hard coding response to a hint into the second tier, what CLIC does is it wants to observe the requests that are coming in, and it wants to automatically learn which hints signal good caching opportunities and which don't. Okay? And then based on what it learns, it will make decisions about how to respond to the hints that are coming down. Okay? So if we can do this, this would be nice because we'll just naturally handle new hint types, because when we start to see them, we'll learn how they behave. We'll be able to compare hints from different clients as long as we consider them, the hints that come from this client to be different from the hints that come from this other client. We can learn which ones are better for caching and so on. Okay? So with CLIC, we're separating the generation of the hints, which is done by the storage clients, just like in all other policies, from the interpretation of those hints, which is something that's done dynamically and online by CLIC. Okay? So this is kind of, if you don't remember anything else from the talk, you can just remember this picture. This summarizes what CLIC does, right? So it gets a hint from the first tier. It's a blarg gorp hint. CLIC doesn't have any idea what that means. It doesn't matter, right? Hint says, I don't know what blarg and gorp mean, but I've seen blarg gorp hints before. Okay, and when I saw them before, they were good caching candidates, and so I'm going to cache this page. This is what Qlik is trying to do. Okay, so as is the case with all other hint-based techniques, in order for this to work, you still have to modify the client, the database system in this case, to generate one or more types of hints. And our model for Qlik is that a client can generate one or more types of hints, and all that a type of hint does is it defines a set of hint values. And when you issue a request to the storage server, you attach a hint set to your request, which is one hint of each of the types that your client knows how to generate. Okay? And unfortunately, one of the things I can't really tell you in this talk is how to decide which hints to generate from your client. I would love to have some nice theory of how to do that, but you can generate whatever you want. For our work here, we modified DB2, which is IBM's relational database system, and MySQL, which is, as you know, everyone knows MySQL, to generate hints when they issued requests. And just to illustrate, from DB2, we generated these five types of hints. So buffer pool IDs, because DB2 has multiple buffer pools, we tag each request with which buffer pool the request is coming from. An object ID, which sort of identifies a table and a set of related indexes in DB2. An object type, which distinguishes tables from indexes. The request type, which is essentially write hints, but it also distinguishes prefetch reads from non-prefetch reads. And DB2's buffer priority, which is an importance hint. And we picked this list partly because we knew some of these things were useful from previous work, and partly because they were easy. Right, so this is all information that was there in the buffer manager. We didn't have to reach up through multiple layers of stuff in DB2 to get this. It was easy to generate these hints without too much work. And so these are the ones we picked. And we're going to hope some of them are useful. Okay, so this is a picture of the cache in Qlik, just to illustrate the way Qlik is going to work. And the idea, the basic idea here is that in Qlik's cache, these things are the hint sets. These things are the pages. And the idea is Qlik just, in its cache, it associates each cached page with the hint set that that page was most recently requested with, read or written with. Okay, so I organize the pages according to the hint sets that we saw recently. And Qlik is going to assign a priority to each hint set. And cache management is very easy. When a new request, a read or write request comes in, it's a request for a page. It's got a hint set associated with it. I compare the priority of the hint set for this page that's coming in with the existing priorities in the cache. And I'm going to, if I need to make a replacement, I'm just going to kick out a page from the lowest priority hint. So management of the cache is very simple. And the heart of Qlik is trying to decide how to choose automatically these hint set priorities by observing the requests that it sees. And to do that, we use a very simple cost-benefit analysis of the request stream. And this is the idea of the cost-benefit analysis that Qlik is using to decide what the priority should be. So this is a timeline that I'm showing you here. And this is a request that's arriving at the server for a page P with an attached hint set H. And the question that we're asking here is, the server wants to know, should I cache P at this point in time? Okay, and the answer to that question depends on a couple of things. So if the next request for P is going to occur over here, and the next request is a read request, then I get some benefit from caching P here and leaving it in the cache until the next request comes along. Okay, so there's a benefit to caching if the next request is a read, and I can kind of use the there's a benefit to caching if the next request is a read. And there's a cost to caching, okay? So the longer I have to wait for the next request, the longer that page has to take up a slot in my cache before I obtain the benefit. So that's the benefit and the cost. And what Qlik does is, when this request arrives, it can't really look into the future and decide when the next request for P is going to come along. So instead, Qlik is going to base its cost and benefit estimates for this request on previous requests that it has observed with hint set H. Okay? So the fundamental idea here is that hint set H needs to be telling us something. I'll have looked at the previous requests that have come in with hint set H. I'll have looked at their costs and benefits, and based on the cost and benefits I observed for them, I'll guess the cost and benefit of this thing here. And to prioritize hints, we just use a cost-benefit ratio. So for each hint set H, we look at the read hit rate, which is our measure of benefit, divided by the time until the read hit, which is our measure of cost, and we use that to prioritize the hints. Okay? And to illustrate what we get when we do this, this is a picture from one of our traces from DB2 of the results of this analysis. So what you're looking at here is a scatter plot. Down on the bottom axis, you're seeing each of these triangles here represents one of the distinct hint sets that DB2 generated in this trace. This was a trace from a TPCC workload running on DB2. Okay, so there are lots of hint sets that we observe. This is the priority that Click estimated for that hint set. This is the frequency with which that particular hint set occurred. Okay, and what you should see from this picture is that, I should also say, this is a log scale. This is a log scale. Okay, so what you should see from this is there's a lot of spread here, especially in the priority dimension. Okay, so there are hint sets, even frequent hint sets, with widely different priorities. So if you look at this and this, they differ by a factor of about 100 in priority, which means that things that are coming in with this hint set are either have a read hit frequency that's 100 times higher than those other ones, or they're re-referenced 100 times sooner, or some combination of the two. Okay, so it's going to be, you know, Click is going to be much better off caching things that come in with this tag than with this tag. Okay, and the other thing that you might note here is that there's also a lot of frequency skew here. We use, you know, priority information to make sure that Click is effective. We can use this frequency skew to make Click efficient. And I'm probably going to have to skip over that part, but that's the general idea. Okay, and I flagged a couple of these things just to indicate what these hints actually happen to mean. Okay, so these things happen to be replacement rights on the stock table in the TPCC database. Click doesn't need to know that. It's just kind of nice to go back and look and see what these hints actually are. Okay, so I have, in the interest of time, I'm going to skip over this slide on efficiency, and I'd be happy to talk with you about this later. But if you think about what I'm saying, you might be a little bit worried about how much space we're going to have to use to track all these statistics. And we can deal with that problem by using a couple of tricks, by relying on the skew and by not tracking statistics for all of the pages that we see. Okay? And I want to use the remaining time just to give you a flavor of how well this works. So the way we evaluated this is by using trace-driven simulations of the second tier of the storage server buffer cache to compare Click to other policies. So we had real systems at the first tier, DB2 and MySQL. We put a load on those systems, TPCC and TPCH workloads. We modified those systems to attach hints to their requests and to generate traces of the actual I/O requests that they issued while they were running these workloads, and the traces have the hints in them. And then we take those traces and we feed them to a simulation of the second tier cache, which implements a number of replacement policies. And what we're trying to do is measure the read hit rate of these different policies to see how well they're doing. So we implemented Click, we implemented LRU and ARC as examples of hint oblivious policies that could be used in a second tier cache. And we implemented this TQ algorithm as an example of an ad hoc hint aware algorithm that just knows how to understand write hints. And we implemented sort of OPT, which is the usual optimal offline algorithm that replaces the page that's not read for the longest time in the future, just to give us an upper bound on how well we could hope to do. Okay, so there are a lot of graphs in the paper. I'm not going to show you everything. I just want to show you a sample of the kinds of things that we saw. All of these graphs have the same form. So on this axis, you're seeing the server cache read hit ratio, which is what we hope to do well in. So higher is better. On this axis, you're seeing the size of the cache in the storage server, the second tier. Okay, this is for a TPCC workload, And in this case, the server cache size here is ranging from about 10% of the initial size of the database to about 50% of the initial size of the database. The database actually grows while the TPCC workload runs. So at the end, it's a little smaller. And we've got, you know, when we generate these traces, we can put different workloads on DB2, and we can vary the database parameters, like the size of the database buffer cache and other tunable parameters to see how those things affect the behavior of Qlik. So this is kind of a medium-sized DB2 buffer cache. About 40% of the initial database fits into that cache, and we're varying the server cache size. What you see up at the top here is opt. These two at the bottom here, this is LRU and this is ARC, and these two are the hint-aware policies. Okay, so the circles are Qlik. So what you should see from this is, you know, your mileage varies depending on the sizes of the caches. Down here, it's not actually helping very much when the cache is small, but when we're doing well with these hint-aware policies, we can get a factor of 2 or sometimes even more than 2 improvement in the server cache hit ratio by taking advantage of these hints. Okay? You may also see that in this case, Qlik and TQ are doing about the same. So we knew that TQ did pretty well in this scenario, and essentially this, you know, by hard coding responses to particular hints, the nice thing about Qlik in this case is that it's learning to do as well as TQ does, right, without having to be told anything about write hints. Okay? So it's either using the same hint information that TQ was using, or it's figuring out something else from the trace that's just as useful for it. Okay, here is another example from TPCH. None of the policies do as well in this TPCH trace as they did in the TPCC trace. And again, it takes longer in this case to see some benefit from hinting, but by the time we get up to a caches in this size, we're again seeing about a factor of 2 here. And Qlik is doing a little better than TQ as well. So there are definitely some scenarios where this does not help. Here is an example where I'm doing TPCC, but I've got a very small buffer at the top tier. Okay, and as a result, it's not absorbing very much of the temporal locality, and there is a lot of temporal locality available for the second tier to take advantage of. And in this kind of scenario, even LRU is doing pretty well. So it doesn't really matter what kind of policy you use if you've got this kind of temporal locality available. Okay, and last but not least, this is a scenario that we had trouble with when we were doing the TQ work, okay, because of brittleness in the ad hoc technique. So this is a situation where the buffer cache at DB2 is quite large. Okay, so it's a difficult situation because there's almost nothing for the second tier to work with when the locality comes around. And you can see that the locality-based policies essentially provide almost no help at the second tier. Qlik is still doing reasonably well in this case, so certainly a lot better than these things. And it deals with the problem that we had with TQ, which is that the assumptions that went into the ad hoc TQ policy didn't really hold very well in this kind of situation. So replacement rights really weren't that much better than recovery rights in this kind of scenario because DB2 was cleaning things in its buffer cache in anticipation of replacement, but not replacing them. Okay, so TQ is able to sort of learn that kind of policy, the policy that TQ used, was not effective in that case. Okay, so Luba tells me I have 1 minute left, so I will wrap up. So there are more experiments in the paper. I guess the takeaways here are what Qlik is doing is it's learning to identify I/O hints that signal good caching opportunities, and hopefully learning to ignore, conversely, to ignore hint sets that do not signal good caching opportunities. It naturally accommodates new hint types, hints from multiple storage clients, because it's adaptive. And for our traces, which were all database workloads, we found that Qlik's performance, Qlik usually dominated the hint oblivious policies, sometimes by a factor of 2 or 3. We found that Qlik dominated the hint-aware TQ algorithm, so it was always at least as good as TQ, if not better, by learning. And the stuff that I skipped shows how to keep Qlik's space overhead for learning low. So for all of the experiments that I showed you, Qlik is using about 1% of the space available in the second tier cache to track statistics about page re-references and re-reference distances that it needs to decide on the priorities for the hints. Okay, so that's it. Thank you.
Irfan Ahmed, VMware. Can you provide some intuition as to how Qlik would perform with a large number of clients? I don't know if that was presented, at least not in the results that you showed, and also how it would respond in presence of very dynamic workloads. So how fast you can adapt your learning, maybe not even just in your prototype, but what your intuition is about that.
Okay. So we haven't tested with a large number of clients. There's a small consolidation scenario in the paper where we look at a couple of clients running two different workloads to see whether we can deal with those things. So how it will deal with large numbers of clients, if there are good signals in the hints from some clients, Qlik should be able to pull them out. One thing that you might be concerned about in that situation is that the number of hints might get very large, right, if you've got a lot of clients and they're all issuing different hints. And again, the stuff that I skipped over included some methods that we're using to deal with large number of hints. And your second question was about dynamic workloads.
Yeah, first, yeah.
So I didn't mention that at all, but to deal with time-varying workloads, we didn't spend a lot of time worrying about that, but essentially right now what Qlik does is it periodically throws out all the statistics that it's collected and starts from scratch and recomputes new priorities periodically to deal with change. And we're just exponentially decaying the priorities that we computed in previous intervals as we get the priorities for the new intervals. So it's kind of a standard adaptation technique. We haven't worried too much about it.
Hi, Ken. Peter Honeyman,
Peter,
University
hi.
Of Michigan.
Yeah.
Can a client generate an artificial hint stream that would improve its performance at the cost of other clients? And can a server recognize when a client is doing that?
So when there are multiple clients, we essentially treat the client ID as another hint type. So the server can recognize which client is which. And definitely, so in the consolidation experiment in the paper, we put several clients together. We didn't partition the cache. We had them share it. And we deliberately set it up so that one of the clients got a lot more benefit from caching than the other. And what Qlik will do in that situation is give all the cache to the client that gets the benefit from it and starve the other ones. So Qlik will do that, and you can either sort of redo Qlik to, if you've got some sort of explicit quality of service requirements you want to use, you could try to rejig Qlik, or you can partition the cache and then use Qlik in each partition.
Thanks.
Yep.
Hi, Emil Snyder from EMC. You said early on that you couldn't really tell us or, you know, what the best set of hints for the clients to generate would be. It strikes me that Qlik should tell the client. Have you looked at that at all? If you hint both directions and clients have a promiscuous number of hints coded in, they can start out with a set and Qlik can tell the client, oh, well, these were useful, these weren't. The client could sort of iteratively.
So I would design a lot of hints into the client and then get Qlik to tell the client to stop sending certain hints.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. We
haven't looked at
that
yet.
Okay, thank you very much.